have the sound. You have to listen closely. I have to tell you about it because the Perseverance did record some sound as well as taking some vision. This is the rover landing on Mars, but you have to listen quite carefully for what we think is wind. Well, it's not exactly a Wellington southerly, is it? And we've got Jessie's door closing in the middle of it. But it's exciting, Susie. I know this isn't your specialty. I know it's not glowing things underwater. But it's an exciting moment for science.
It is. I totally agree with you. The idea that we are listening to the sound on another planet just using some microphones, that we've seen these incredible pictures of the wind blowing that sort of, I don't know, dust soil around, you know, using GoPro cameras. I mean, it is cool. I will give you that. It is awesome.
It is very cool. And I loved watching the face of the scientists. I'm trying to remember that brilliant scientist when we got the look on her face when something happened a couple of years ago. And then social media did its thing after that.
Oh, yes.
But I just loved looking at the celebrations and the high fives. Years and years of work has gone into just getting a rover to land, but be delicately dropped, or delicately sort of placed on Mars. It's an incredible feat, and I just love looking at the human celebration.
Yeah, totally. I think especially for these kinds of things where you're sending something to another planet, there's all sorts of things that can go wrong. In the meantime, is it going to turn on? Is it going to do anything? You know, that delay of waiting when everything's supposed to have gone right and, you know, waiting for that signal to come back. I mean, that's the anticipation, you know, for those people who it is their life's work must be incredible. I mean, I know what it's like just to, you know, want to open an incubator to see something. And it's quite something when that incubator's on another planet.
That's right. So, and the vision coming through is great vision as well.
Yeah. All right. Again, you know, what I kind of love about this whole thing is how our technology is changing. You know, I mean, these were, so Perseverance is this little rover, the kind of, I guess, sibling to Curiosity. it's got this little helicopter with it called Ingenuity. You know, they were launched just a year ago, or less than a year ago, sorry, July, I think it was. The kind of the technology now, how every year when we do something, you know, the pictures, the sound we get back is better and better. It's amazing.
All right. Now, let's get on to COVID.
And
obviously,
COVID.
We are awaiting test results from this latest retesting of all the students, the testing of the Kmart staff, and just to see if the sneaky thing has snuck out further. At the moment, I know you were a little wary, expressing reservation about moving so quickly out of level 3 lockdown in Auckland. At the moment, what are you making of wait and see before, hopefully not, but potentially them to go up again?
Yeah, so the reason I was reluctant to move quite so fast was just that we were still waiting on test results from the, you know, from the remainder of the school. The fact that they came back almost all of them negative was a really good sign. And the fact that the wastewater testing is still showing, you know, there isn't a big outbreak. So I feel okay. The really important thing is, you know, this is a good test of our contact tracing and our test, trace, isolate strategy. The idea being that if we can very quickly identify people who have the virus but have also been exposed, and then they all end up, they are put in self-isolation, that you can stop outbreaks that way. So we have shown this in the past. We need to see whether the strategy works well for the new infectious variants. And it may well be that we just have to do this kind of idea of, so with contact tracing, you find the people who've been exposed and you put them into self-isolation. We might have to do two rounds of that. So who's been exposed, but who have they potentially exposed? Because what's really clear, you can see this in the family that just tested positive, is that sometimes that transmission happens very fast. They saw this in Melbourne recently. And so it may well be that by the time you've identified a case and their close contacts, the close contacts are already infectious and may well have passed it on. So we can do this. It just might mean doing this kind of double contact tracing. Yes. Anyway, so should we? But we'll talk about, and again, the reason why this is so important, why we have to keep this out of our community, why we're desperate that the rest of the world does the same thing, is that there's a new study just come out that's looked at not just measuring the number of deaths, but to actually look at how premature those deaths were. And I think this is, it's a really important argument because there is a real argument by some people and in some countries that those people who are most likely to die are elderly, and they would have died anyway. That's the argument. It's a horrible, horrible argument. And so this group of researchers basically looked at the data from 81 countries to see if they could basically make a calculation for how many lives have been lost or how many years of life have been lost. So the idea being that when somebody elderly dies, yes, they may have only had 1, 2, 3 years left to live. But when somebody young dies, they've obviously had many years left to live. And so you've lost many years of life. Do you want to take a guess how many? I guess first I'll say, so this, their analysis goes back to January. It covers 1.3 million deaths. And they used a couple of large databases that are sort of being developed. But since then, the actual number of confirmed deaths is 2.4 million. So bearing in mind their analysis is going to be a bit out of date already, can you guess how many years of life left? That gives you a clue. Years of life have been lost to COVID-19 so far.
Well, it's at least 2.4 million and it might be more like three times that.
Yeah, so their estimate is 20 million.
Right.
Again, based on that half the number of deaths that we know about so far. The average years of life lost per death is 16.
Oh, wow. That is much higher than one anticipates because you think of, I know the risk increases with age, but you still think highest risk being, you know, 80s, but it's much higher.
Right. And it's because globally, just a quarter of the deaths come from people who are over the age of 75. And actually, a huge number of people who are dying globally are people under that age. So I think about half of the total years of life lost come from people who've died between 55 and 75.
Goodness.
And people who are younger. Yeah. So it's just another, we got to deal with this, people. And, you know, I hope everyone in New Zealand feels confident that we, you know, the path we've taken was the right one, because this is just awful. Anyway, we'll keep going.
The long COVID stuff, it's interesting. New Zealand scientists to the fore on this. Warren Tate, Professor Warren Tate from University of Otago, we were talking about last week, who's an expert on ME and is now studying New Zealand long COVID haulers. What's the journal you've been reading?
So this was just a really small study in the US that's taken 177 people. So it was from a particular hospital and followed them over the course of 9 months. What's really interesting about the study is that a lot of the long COVID stuff at the moment that's being published is about people who've been hospitalised. This actually took these group of people who had tested positive and then regardless of whether they were hospitalised or not, followed them up. And it just again shows even if people have had a mild illness that they are going on to, you know, have at least one lasting symptom. So basically a third of people with mild illness and a third of hospitalised people commonly felt either fatigue or a loss of sense of taste or smell. So, yeah, persisting for months and months. Again, a reason why we don't want this.
I think we'll save the others for next time to do them more properly.
Sure.
Mass extinctions particularly, we've got enough of those at the moment. We'll come back to that. it's got a wonderful geomagnetic event attached if we didn't have enough to worry about. But the coral reefs...
I guess the important is don't worry about that.
No, don't worry about it. Exactly. There's nothing else to worry about. The coral reefs is a lovely picture on the website. And when we come back to it next time, this is to do with sort of cherry picking your coral, is it? They've got signatures of their resistance to bleaching on them.
Yeah. So some scientists who've been studying corals that have recovered from a coral bleaching and those that haven't, basically giving some clues as to how you might pick your corals to help repopulate reefs. So yeah, let's talk about that.
Let's talk it next time, Susie. Thank you. It's always appreciated. Susie Wiles is our science commentator on 9 to noon.